It is 12:03 in the afternoon, Mountain Time, here at UNC Radio. And as I've been promising all morning, we do have a very special guest here on the show. He's on the phone with us, and let me explain a little bit about him and why I feel connected to what he does in some basic way. And I've been a writer and arts journalist and theater critic for well over two decades at this point, and have survived all those kinds of things, written for pretty famous places, written for places that closed up after a couple of weeks, written for places that paid me well, or written for places that didn't pay me so well or forgot to pay me at all and they went out of business. That's the nature of journalism. It has been for a long, long time, but it's gotten even hairier and weirder and worse over the past few years, certainly for print journalists, just because online has made such crazy inroads and changes into the nature of what constitutes writing for newspapers and magazines. So the fellow that I've got on the phone with me is calling all the way from Texas, where he was the film critic and then the book critic for the Dallas Morning News, which is, you know, basically the big big newspaper over there. And so although I never lived in Dallas, I've visited Dallas, Fort Worth a couple of times, I thought it would be really cool to talk to the major critic for one of the big cities in America, someone with that kind of readership, that kind of power and experience, and also someone who, like so many other critics, has been, has had to deal with the economic nature of things over the past couple of years. His name is Philip Wunsch, and first of all, I want to welcome him to the neighborhood. Hello, Philip.
Hello, Dave.
Oh, good to hear from you. You sound great. How are you doing? How's the fall treating you?
It's filled with allergies, but I'm doing okay.
Let me tell you. I am getting over my first cold in a year. I'm having fabulous times. I get a little allergy in the morning, then I feel wonderful. I have all this energy despite the high altitudes here. And then just a couple of days ago, bam, laid me low with a head cold, and you can still hear it like in my throat and my chest and bleh. So, something about October, something about this time of year. But do you get allergies all year long or just around now?
12 months a year I have them.
Good Lord. Do they last all day? Do you just get them like in the mornings or what?
Oh, it's 24/7.
How do you do? Do you take shots? What do you do?
Oh, I take a lot of pills, and I sneeze a lot, and use a lot of Kleenex.
Okay. That's a really attractive picture right there from Phil. So let's get right to the business and experience and that side of things. When did you first start writing for newspapers?
In 1967, right after college, I went to work for the Dallas Times Herald, which was the afternoon newspaper. Mm-hmm. And then in 1969, I joined the Dallas Morning News and retired in 2006.
Now, are you using the word retired in quotes, or did you actually say, I've had enough, I'm going to retire?
I took a buyout.
Okay.
I saw the handwriting on the wall, and I took a buyout.
And that meant that they said, look, we're going to give you a certain amount of, go-away money, we're going to hold your health benefits for a little while, please take this deal. Is that basically what the buyout meant?
Yes, and they were going to change film coverage, use much more wire copy, and that wasn't a situation that I cared to deal with.
I
was 61 years old when I retired, so it wasn't like I had a whole future ahead of me.
Actually, there's no reason a good writer or film critic could not have a 20 to 30-year future writing about movies. I mean, you go to the movies, or at some point it's just going to be DVDs and cable anyway, and write about it. So technically, you could have had a very, very long future there had not the whole nature of the business changed, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah, that is true, yes.
How many films were you generally reviewing or writing about a week?
Oh, it would vary. You know, of course, sometimes as many as six, sometimes just one. But I also did, you know, think pieces, as they were called, on movie trends and the careers of various directors and actors. And I did interviews. And I loved the job. It was something that I'd wanted to do since I was like 11 years old or even younger.
And churn out something along the lines of 3 to 5 stories, be they reviews or be they features or think pieces. Is that about right, 3 to 5 stories a week?
Oh, I would say more than that. Maybe 4 to 5, actually. Not a great deal more than that.
But if people have this idea of critics, some of them anyway, that they just go to a movie or the theater once or twice a week, they dash off a couple hundred words and they're done. It was not like that even in the old days. I mean, there was a ton more work involved. And then maybe people don't realize that.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We track down stories just like a hard news reporter does. If there's a rumor, for example, that AMC Theaters is going to open a theater in a new shopping center, you know, we track that down. Anything with a Texas connection, we would track down.
Now, let me ask you, do you remember the first movie that you reviewed, either for the first Dallas paper you were at in 67 or for the Dallas Morning News in 1969?
I remember the first one for the Dallas Morning News was A Walk with Love and Death, which starred Angelica Houston in her first film and the son of Moshe Dayan, the Israeli hero. He played the male lead, and I think that was the last movie he ever made. And Angelica, of course, went on to a very solid career.
Did you notice that she was a star in the making? In your first review, did you say, well, the film is such and such and whatever, but keep your eye on Angelica Houston?
I did. Her presence was very strong. Her handling of dialogue was that of someone who had not had a great deal of experience in film, but her presence, her facial expressions, the way she carried herself, it was excellent. She was excellent movie material.
Huh. And what were some of the other favorite movie-going assignments that you had, be it films you had to review or maybe stars that you had to interview over the next two or three decades?
Well, I had an irritating habit of getting along very well with some actors who were not usually friendly to the press, like Warren Beatty, Richard Gere. I somehow got them to open up with me. And I like to say that I taught Warren Beatty everything he knows about women.
What did someone like Beatty or Richard Gere admit to you or say that surprised you that you had never read anywhere else, that you kind of scooped?
Oh, they were both just relaxed. Beatty talked about filming Bonnie and Clyde in the Dallas area, and he's usually fairly gentlemanly in his comments on fellow actors, but he loosened up and felt that Faye Dunaway had been very difficult to work with in Bonnie and Clyde. And then several years later, I interviewed her, and she was probably my least favorite actress to interview. I think when she played Joan Crawford in Mommy Dearest, they just told her to get out there and act natural. don't do what comes naturally. She was very pompous and very combative in her manner of answering.
And did you see that as some sort of facade? I mean, did you see that she was just being, you know, there's a mental thing going on, or she was protecting herself, or you just thought, no, she's just a bitch?
I would say more the latter.
Okay. So she was the worst. Were there any other people that you have real negative associations about when you would interview them?
Well, I interviewed, as you can imagine, a lot of pompous people.
Okay.
But no one could have been more pompous than Kevin Costner, after Dances with Wolves. He just reminded me of a not very likable politician who was trying to say the right thing, but whose real personality kept creeping out. I don't know how his his last decade has not been particularly noteworthy. Maybe he's gotten more humble, and yet I don't know. I doubt that he has.
That's what I was going to ask. If you interviewed him, let's say, after Dances with Wolves, and then maybe you interviewed him again after Waterworld, and was there a sea change? Did something happen?
No, I did interview him after Waterworld, and he was the same as he had been.
I guess lots of money will couch you from anything, even a failure or two. But let me ask you, did that, when you had that kind of experience interviewing an actor like Faye Dunaway, like Kevin Costner, were you then able to separate that and go back to the movie that they would do?
If they were
a horrible interview, or they're pompous or nasty, and then you were able to clear that out of your mind and give them a wonderful review if they were good in the film?
Yes, and I have... I think Dunaway can be used very well, and Costner can also be used very well. And I have given them good reviews when I felt good reviews were worthy.
Yeah, I thought he was terrific in The Untouchables.
That was very early in his career. He was very good in The Untouchables. I did interview him for The Untouchables, and even then there were edges of pomposity that came through. But a lot of actors and actresses are pompous, and
I guess that's
part of their makeup, and that's okay with me. Mm-hmm. But when it becomes overwhelming, that's when I
Do you intimate that ever in not the reviews then, but like if you're interviewing those kinds of people, are you ever able to sneak into your interview with them, the written interview or your profile, even a hint that they're like that?
Oh yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
For you.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, I interviewed Jack Nicholson, and he was very open, very frank, he talked a little bit about his substance abuses and about his eccentricities, and he saw that I was taking notes and had the tape recorder going, and I wrote down everything that he told me, and I published it. And the next time I interviewed him, it was on in a group interview. It was not a one-on-one interview. And he glared at me and would never call on me to ask a question. And I had a kind of a similar experience with Natalie Wood.
No, Natalie Wood.
She was lovely, but she was very frank, told me that She had been offered the lead in Bonnie and Clyde, but her psychiatrist didn't convince her not to take it because it would mean working with Warren Beatty, with whom she had had an affair earlier. And also he told her, and it's going to be filmed in Texas in the summer. You don't want to have to be in Texas for a couple of months. And you know, I printed all that. And the next time I interviewed her, again, as with Nicholson, it was in a group interview. And I could tell that her handlers were, one of them was standing behind me, like kind of pointing at me and shaking his head, like, don't talk to him, don't talk to him.
And you were just going to warn her not to go swimming.
She's one person, and this surprises people. She's one person whom the camera did not do full justice to. She was very, very, very pretty in movies. But in person, she was stunning. She was ravishing. And she had a melancholy quality that the camera didn't always pick up on. You know, it did a little bit in West Side Story and Splendor in the Grass. And a couple of other films, but she had a really melancholy kind of beauty.
And it's funny, because usually it's the other way around. Usually the movies will pick someone who is pretty and you know, kind of striking, and when they're lit the right way and made up the right way, and the camera gets them, it suddenly makes them extraordinary. Or it makes 5 foot five actors look like they're 6 foot three. It's weird to hear it the other way around.
Yes. And then some of them have been nice, really nice. Once again, it's hard to say because these people are actors, and they can be giving a performance as a nice person.
But you know what? My wife is a sociologist and a gerontologist. And she has studied Irving Goffman and people like that. And on some level, we're all giving a nice performance when we want to be. We're all courteous in a way that we don't necessarily want to be at that moment. There's front stage and backstage. You've probably heard of all this kind of personality stuff. So if the actors are playing or acting nice, well, so are you and I right now, to some extent. We are talking, by the way, with Philip Walsh, who is the retired film and book critic for the Dallas Morning News. I am concentrating on movies, I guess, because that's a bit more exciting.
I actually reviewed quite a few books, but I was not the official book critic.
So what were the years that you were the film critic for the Dallas Morning News? 69 through when?
Well, actually, when I came to the Morning News, I was nightclub and live entertainment critic. And there was no film critic. They just tossed the movies around to the staffers, and so I did get to review a good many movies, but I did not become the official film critic until 1974, and I was the first person at the Morning News to have that title.
Nice.
I held it through 2006, through September of 2006, when I left the paper.
So unless my math is wrong, that's 32 years.
Yes.
Wow. And again, that whole idea is after 32 years, you're still a relatively young person. And relatively somewhat healthy, you're not necessarily a marathon athlete, but you're not dying next week either, God forbid. So hopefully you have a bunch more years ahead of you. And what they do, they say, well, were you getting health benefits? You were a full-timer with benefits and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, oh yes.
So I'm sure they just came to you and said, look, you know, everything's changing, we can't afford to keep you full-time, can't afford to do the health stuff, and they gave you a package, and they just said, okay.
Yeah, well, yes, and I was, you know, one of, oh, I forget how many people who took the buyout.
Well, did you see, have you seen the blog on the Salt Lake City Tribune? There's this writer there who has been compiling a list of film critics who have been in your situation since January 2006. Have you seen this?
I have seen it, yes. Oh,
there's
it is.
55 names on that list.
Uh-huh, yes.
Of people who have either been bought out, retired, you know, for their own sake, or just, you know, asked to kind of retire, or fired, or worse, or reassigned.
Uh-huh.
And we're talking about major people, from everything from the Village Voice to a couple of the New York papers. I mean, it's just, it's astonishing.
Yeah.
What do you think of where arts journalism and criticism is headed in this really turbulent time?
Well, I don't know even what the future of daily newspapers is. Mm-hmm. Sometime within the next decade, papers could become weekly, and they would have room for a film critic, an arts critic.
they just would have no room for news. Because everything they print would be retold, you know?
Imagine
getting a newspaper on Tuesday and it says, oh, by the way, the miners are out.
And I do think that online criticism is the future of daily film criticism. And online you can find some very good writers and some very bad writers. But it's the good writing about movies is still there.
And do you think that the cream will always rise? In other words, there's such a glut of this kind of everybody reviews everything on Amazon.com, but do you think that, you know, the good stuff, if it's consistent, will kind of always bubble up and be more visible?
I may be a cockeyed optimist, but I do think so. Yes.
Speaking of happy and optimistic things, what are some of the favorite films that you reviewed and saw over your tenure, especially some of the little known ones that we might want to seek out at the deep web? There are no more video stores. Seek out on Netflix or something.
Yes. Oh, there was a beautiful film with Robert Duvall, again, early in his career, called Tomorrow. It was with a screenplay by Horton Foote, and from a William Faulkner short story, and it is a beautiful, heartbreaking film, and Duvall is wonderful in it.
Never heard of that, and of course Duvall, his first movie was a semi-cameo in To Kill a Mockingbird as Bradley.
Yes,
Horton Foote's screenplay, of course, so good for him. And we're about to do Tender Mercies with Foote as well. I'll look for that. I'm dying to see that now. What else? What other movies?
Oh, gosh. Running on Empty, which was directed by Sidney Lumet, and it starred River Phoenix.
Oh, Judd Hirsch, right?
Yes, Judd Hirsch and Christine Lonnie.
Yes, I remember. That was a pretty good movie. Yeah.
I thought it was very moving. And it really captured the heartache of being a teenager, young adult. Plus, it captures that very specific situation that these people were in of being fugitives.
That's right. They were 60s radicals, and they had to go underground because they killed somebody.
Some of them
took a long time, but I do not recall that much. Let me ask you, because you're mentioning some relatively small films, or certainly now that the years have passed, relatively unknown or not so remembered, but in your years of reviewing and going through the whole Star Wars period, that created a sea change in American film, where we went from the small films of Scorsese and Coppola and the independent and the auteur director to big budgets, huge special effects, all that kind of thing. What would you say are... How did you respond to those films? Are you able to appreciate and talk up and enjoy a Spider-Man? Or does it bother you?
Let's put it this way. The good Spider-Man I liked a whole lot. The lesser special effects films I don't care for at all. I think that some filmmakers have lost sight of the fact that for special effects to really make an impression, you have to care about the people that they're happening to, the people who are experiencing the explosions or the floods or the whatever. Mm-hmm. And so many movies today are not character-driven. The characters are just, people standing around waiting to get blown up.
Right.
And that does bother me. But I certainly liked Inception. I liked a good many of the Spider-Man movies, and a young actor named Andrew Garfield is going to be the next Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and I think he'll be very good at that. He's now in The Social Network.
Oh, and I think you liked that film, too.
Yes, I did, yes.
Why did you like The Social Network?
Characters. Again, characters, you get to know these people. At first you think, gosh, there's no one here for me to like. But gradually, you do get to like some of the lead characters anyway. And you sympathize with them. And it was just the dialogue is very good. And sometimes that you get the idea that the filmmakers knew it was very good. There's a certain amount of smugness, but it doesn't overwhelm the picture. The dialogue is very good. And I would like to mention two other films that came out this year that were ignored by the public. One is A Solitary Man, with Michael Douglas playing a sex addict who tries to reform but can't quite make it. Mm-hmm. And Susan Sarandon and Danny DeVito are also in the cast. And another film is Mother and Child, which had wonderful performances by Annette Bening and Samuel Jackson and Naomi Watts. And I don't know, I think perhaps the title kind of put people off, made it think it was going to be a sappy movie. And it's a very haunting film, just about a group of women in various stages of motherhood. And I thought it was a beautiful movie.
Okay. You know, it's so great. And this is the other thing that people may not realize about critics. And I say this every time when I've got a writer or a journalist on in the field of either movies or theater. But I'm always telling them, saying, look, very few people in the world love the discipline that they cover the way the critics do. People see critics as being, poo-pooing and looking for the faults and being nasty and only having fun when they're knocking stuff. And they just often don't realize that to see movies that many times a week, and not, you don't just see them, you have to make notes, you have to write about them, think about them, same thing with the theater, you have to love it, and you have to want it to be great every single time. That's, and the fact that after 3.5 decades, you're still going to the movies as almost a civilian at this point, and loving them and appreciating what is special and good about them, be they big blockbusters or small little films, I think that's telling also.
Yes. I still love going to the movies, and I do love now seeing them with a regular audience.
As opposed to an irregular, a screening audience.
That
Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock with a bunch of really sleepy people who had deadlines the night before. I've been there. It's an interesting time to watch a movie, especially a comedy. But let me ask, when you retired from the Dallas Morning News, did you go looking for another gig?
Oh, I did in kind of a half-hearted fashion. And a friend of mine had a blog, and I did some movie reviews on his blog. And, and I did, I guess, some occasional, like, movie lists for another blog. But, listen, I am happy.
Well, thank God, on some level, though, that you had this whole career, you were doing it for all these decades. Presumably, you put some money away, you're settled. You're married. Does your wife still work? Has she worked? What does your wife do?
Oh, well, she has a very successful dog sitting business. I am her assistant.
Ooh.
So I've just spent several days with a wonderful golden retriever.
Aww.
And some terriers and we both love dogs and cats, and we were always so heartbroken when we had to put one of our pets down. Mm. That it's good now to be able to enjoy them and love them but they aren't ours. We don't have the, extraordinary closeness that you can feel with a beloved pet. We do, but...
But it's a week, and you have this wonderful time, and then, you have to deal with vet bills and cancer screenings and all that kind of thing.
Final.
We have dogs that are starting to get a little older, and I totally understand where you're coming from. I'm dragging the day or the 2 days, when we have with our two dogs. But that's cool. How long have you been married?
25 years.
Woo! Did you meet at the movies?
No, we actually had known each other briefly in high school, and then just met quite a bit later, and just hit it off immediately. And my wife Mimi had lived in Houston for quite a while, and wasn't familiar with my name, and I didn't tell her anything other than that I worked at the Dallas Morning News. Mm-hmm. She noticed after several dates that people kept on asking me about movies, and I had to reveal the awful truth that I was a movie critic.
And did she gasp and drop the dishes? No,
she loved movies, and it was funny. We found out that we liked exactly the same type of films, and she enjoyed going to the movies a lot, and it's been great.
Oh, congratulations. That's a wonderful thing here. And I'm 25 years and counting for Mimi. Mimi is your wife, right?
Correct, yes. Yeah.
Now Phil, before I let you go, I first of all want to give regards from a couple of mutual friends and acquaintances. You know Harry Vaughn from New York?
Yes.
How do you know Harry? Harry's a theater journalist, writes a lot for Playbill magazine for years and years and years. How do you know Harry?
Well, from SMU. He was the film critic of the SMU campus newspaper before I was.
Oh.
And he lived in Dallas. And we just met, and I haven't seen Harry in quite a while, so please give him my very best.
I will indeed. And do you know Joe Pollock?
Yes.
How do you know Joe Pollock?
Well, I met him on various film junkets.
Oh, okay. Because I know him from the American Theater Critics Association that he and his wife go to pretty much every year. And so when they got the email about the show that I'm doing with you, they said, oh, my God, say hi to Phil Walsh. So I'm saying hi to Phil Walsh. And also, I've been trying to reach Jerome Weeks, who was the theater critic for the last 20 years. I haven't spoken to him in a long time. I don't know how he's doing or if you knew him very well or anything like that.
We're colleagues, and he's writing for a blog now.
Mm. Who isn't?
and I did run into him, and he seemed content and happy.
Well, good. Let me ask, speaking of content and happy, now that the pressure's off, so to speak, you get to see and write about the films that you really want to, how do you feel the time that used to be filled with going to screenings, setting aside 3 to 5 hours to write and edit your piece and you know, the interviews and stuff like that. What fills the time now that you're retired?
Oh, I can watch old movies. My wife and I both love old movies. We read. Time just flies by. The 4 years since I've retired have been the fastest 4 years of my life.
Wow. Well, it's sort of sad to hear because as much as you love your job, it's interesting that a job like that can stop and you look back and go, I didn't really need it that much. I'm having this good time now, But we had a wonderful time talking to Philip Walsh. Now, if people wanted to read the work that you are writing now, is there a place that you're specifically sometimes posting on?
No, not really. I do post an occasional opinion on Facebook.
Okay. Do you have a Facebook address? Do you think people visit your site?
No, not really. I just log on to Facebook and write an occasional opinion. I really enjoy being an ordinary film goer right now. Huh. But if ever anyone wants to email me, they can reach me at pwunch@yahoo.com.
And that's WUNTCH. There's no S in there. It's just WUNTCH.
Phil,
pwunch@yahoo.com.
Yes.
Well, pwunch@yahoo.com. This is Dave's Gone By at AOL.com. Thanking you so much for...
Enjoyed it, Dave.
Well, me too. And I wish you many, many years of pressure-free... note-taking and writing-free, delightful movie going, and a great time in Texas. Thank you again for being in the neighborhood.
You bet, and tell Rick and Barbara hello.
Oh, yes, the Silvermans, I will indeed. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.